Medicine returns for a powerful new season.
Our role is being there on someone's worst day.
It can also be a really tough place to work.
Step onto the front line with First Nations medical practitioners.
You had a fall, did you?
With unprecedented access.
You can't control what's going to happen next.
The series reveals how modern medicine and cultural knowledge work together to deliver better care.
That's a pretty beautiful thing to be part of.
Our Medicine. Stream now on SBS On Demand.
The latest report on closing the gap targets, released last month, found just 4 of 19 targets are on track. Among those targets Australia is failing to meet, the country is moving backward when it comes to reducing suicide rates for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, which are now more than 3 times higher than for non-Indigenous Australians. First Nations health advocates and practitioners are urgently calling for investment in new approaches to preventative mental health support that are led by First Nations wisdom and experience. I'm Angelica Waite, and I've been speaking with Clinton Schultz, a Gomeroi Gamilaroi man and director of First Nations strategy and partnerships with the Black Dog Institute. For more than a decade, he's been a pioneering voice when it comes to finding new models for preventative care that reflect the depth, complexity and connectedness of First Nations ways of knowing, being and doing. I started by asking Mr. Schultz how he came to study and work in the field of psychology.
I guess what led me to psychology was a little bit of a different journey to many people. I actually was living overseas prior to going to university, and while I was overseas, I'd started to write up some programs that I thought I could bring back to Australia and help young Aboriginal people with being able to stay connected to whatever it is that they loved doing and that they were passionate about and that they were good at, be that academia, be that music, be that sport, whatever it may actually be. And I brought these programs back. I'd presented them to a few organizations. I'd got feedback saying these are great programs, but what's your qualification to actually do this? And I said, well, nothing. I'm a chef. But I was one of these kids, and I think I've got something that I can add. And they basically all just said, well, come back and see us when you've got some qualifications. So I rocked up at a Griffith University and went to the Aboriginal support unit there and basically just asked some of the aunties there, you know, this is what I want to achieve. What should I study? And they wrote out a few courses, and psychology was what I chose from those.
Were there things that at that point you just thought, there's some real issues here that I want to be addressing? You know, did you have that feeling? And if so, what were some of those issues?
Yeah, look, I made university quite difficult for myself because I did choose to, I guess, raise the discomfort that I had with a lot of what was being taught in the program that I'd chosen to undertake. So at that stage, so we're talking over 20 years ago, you know, there was very little cultural responsiveness within psychology, particularly the way that it was taught at universities. And so I was constantly battling with my lecturers and with the university around what we were being taught and how I didn't see it as applicable to working with my own mob. And that became quite draining and challenging at times, particularly, you know, all my assessments I generally write from an Aboriginal perspective, and those perspectives would often be challenged, and yeah, it definitely made it a longer journey and a more difficult journey than probably what I could have undertaken, but I wouldn't have done it any other way, because hopefully now First Nations students coming through, hopefully in some shape or form, I've in some way help to influence changes in the system that are going to make that journey more inclusive and safe for them.
And I know some of your work looks at this idea of social and emotional well-being. Can you tell me a bit about this concept and what that kind of means for you and some of the things that it describes, especially for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people?
So social emotional well-being is a holistic concept of health and well-being that's understood and held by many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. In terms of the social emotional well-being framework that is largely referred to these days in a lot of national strategy and policy and utilised by many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisations and many mental health professionals in Australia, that came together about a decade ago when myself Anipat Dudgeon, Dr. Graham G, Amanda Hart, and some others, we came together and we're having conversations about how do we explain this really complex way of understanding well-being to people who are unlikely to have had the opportunity to view well-being from that perspective before, because it's not the way that the professions are run and it's not what's the training and the education kind of leads them to understanding in the first place. So in its first instance, we really developed that framework to help non-Indigenous people understand an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander perspective of a more holistic wellbeing concept. But since then, it's been really beneficial to many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples for them to be able to work with their own mobs and to better explain their understandings with their employers or with their organisations.
And what are some of the things that model takes into account? What are some of the things that are maybe in that model that aren't in a traditional Western approach to wellbeing?
So the model is largely based around relationality or connectivity. So it highlights a bunch of the, I guess, different domains or elements that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have identified are important to them in terms of their overall sense of strong positive self. And they include things like connection to strong mind and body, connection to community, connection to family, connection to country, the environment, nature, connection to spirituality. So some of those areas we're used to working in the mental health space. So the mind space, you know, psychology is quite adverse to working in that space, but it still doesn't necessarily view it from a First Nations perspective. So it views it in terms of cognitions, emotions, memories, everything that it understands, that are the processes and the abilities of the mind, but it hasn't always, I guess, accommodated for other experiences and understandings of what the mind is and what it's capable of. So one of those things, for instance, is our ability to connect to nature and connect to our ancestors. So traditional psychology may suggest that me engaging in practices that connect me to my ancestors, where I can sit and actually have a conversation with those that have come before me and look for answers in that, that might get suggested to me as hallucinatory rather than it's something of healthy mind. So it really tries to help people to understand that there is other experiences that people have, and that we shouldn't just push those aside as being maladaptive or signs of ill health, that they're just other perspectives and they're other experiences of certain facets of the self, and that there is other things that people hold in really high regard in terms of their sense of self, like a connection to culture, for instance. In the work that I sort of done post the development of the social emotional wellbeing model, I was more interested in expanding that to fully reflect an Aboriginal perspective of wellness that was inclusive of our old knowledges. And part of that is about understanding that as Aboriginal peoples, we've always had an understanding of cell memory. Many people will yarn about it in terms of the soul, and the soul being all that memory that's held in ourselves, all that epigenetic and genetic memory that's held in ourselves. So the information from the past that we carry with us and what it is that we do today that continues to write that narrative into the cells that we then share and take forward.
And I'm wondering, for you working as a psychologist, straddling these two systems, just wondering for you how that's been sort of trying to reconcile a more traditional approach with this more kind of holistic, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island knowledge-informed approach. How's that been for you trying to kind of navigate or straddle those two?
I think I made a decision very early on when I was still at university, undertaking my degree, that this is what I wanted to do. And so I guess once I'd made that decision, I'd kind of made the choice that this is a battle that I felt was worth fighting, and therefore I haven't necessarily found it as difficult, I think, as if I'd constantly had to I guess try and reconcile or challenge myself on that throughout. So I spend most of my time working from the perspective of what I've had the opportunity to learn off my elders and through our traditional ways of knowing and being and doing, and looking at how can that be used in the practice of psychology, rather than trying to fit that, trying to fit it the other way around. So I'm always coming with, I guess, my law and culture first, and those ways of knowing being first, and looking at how I can then use that, rather than coming from a psychological perspective first and then trying to accommodate for culture. So that's the way that I've managed to navigate it. I understand that it's still extremely difficult for many, both students and practitioners out there, trying to reconcile the differences that exist between our traditional knowledge systems and practices and those that continue to be taught and utilised in mainstream mental health today.
Has there kind of been a shift in Australia? Do you find that people are more open to these other kind of approaches?
There has definitely been a shift. There's been a shift both at from the accreditation level, so even the programs that are taught within universities now, like cultural responsiveness is a heavy part of that. So there has to be certain levels of inclusion of Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander ways of knowing, being and doing within what is taught now. So that's been great to see over the last couple of decades. And I think there is a far greater interest amongst practitioners also to look at how might we be able to work differently in certain circumstances or with different groups of people, because I think there's been a recognition that the ways that we were taught to do the role at university just doesn't fit with everybody. Works great with some people, but it just doesn't fit for everybody. And so if we want to be human-centric and we want to be able to provide gold standard care, we really do need to be culturally responsive. I think one of the most important things that we need to recognise is that what we get to do as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander practitioners in the mental health space is still heavily governed by non-Indigenous systems, and there can be conflicts and contradictions that can be quite tiring and challenging for many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander practitioners and just generally Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who work in the health and community services kind of space. So we still do experience high levels of burnout amongst our workforce, and a lot of that is from the colonial load that we still are faced with day to day. I think one of the most important things that need to happen, and we unfortunately missed the opportunity for it a couple of years ago, is for a truly collective, representative voice that has some decision-making authority with government.
Insight Now has a dedicated live channel on SBS On Demand. That means episodes of Insight play back-to-back non-stop. Go to SBS On Demand, scroll down to the featured live channels, and then select Insight. It's that easy.